This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Good afternoon. Welcome, everyone. Our speaker, Merle Hart, will be speaking with us about quality, effective board structure and governance. Merle has served, is serving as business resource officer at Anabaptist Financial. Prior to this, he served as on the board of Faith Builders. He's been serving. He's also served as executive officer at Anabaptist Financial for 12 years and 27 years as president of Ag Salt Manufacturing. He's been in a variety of boards and seen what works and what works better. And he's going to speak from his experience on what makes a quality board and inspire us toward excellence.
Yes, well, good afternoon and welcome back. Wondering how many were in my first class. Okay, about a third of you. So we'll do just a little bit review, but not much. So you don't need to walk out for the first 5 minutes and back in. How many of you are sitting here? We're going to talk about boards, obviously, but also the flip side is the administrator or the president or the operational side. How many here are sitting here from the administration side of the organization? Not the board, but the administration, top administration or top team. Okay, just a couple. The rest are board. You're sitting here with interest in the board side. Yeah. Well, welcome to those of you on the administration side. We're going to finish the day with that very important piece of supportive delegation. And you notice I changed my title from what was published, because I just, as I got into this, it's like you just can't stop with good structure, great structure and process without talking about delegation. And so I'm just going to try to squeeze it in here to the 45 minutes. This is a content dump. This isn't a discussion. I'm here all tomorrow if there's discussion or whatever. So it is packed with content. But feel free to wave your hand and stop if something doesn't make sense. I want to just acknowledge the resources that I've used to pull this together. The resource you're picking up there in your hand is not my notes. It's just a kind of the backdrop to some of the work to prepare these two talks. I also offered this to the loans groups that meets once a year, the financial loan groups, and then doing again here. And essentially, that's just some of the deeper detail of what I'm sharing. In particular, you'll find 24 principles in there. I'm talking about four core elements. 24 simply goes deeper into the four. We're talking about it today, though, more overarching, but there's some of the more detailed thinking there. And also in the back, there's, you know, templates of board policy that AF has used. So I've pulled, these are my about six or seven just published resources. I mentioned them in last session. There they are. Some of them book and some of them website. This book is in the back in a box. It's free for the taking on your way out if you don't have a copy, and we'll read it. It's yours for the taking. Pulled heavily from John Carver as well and the various organizations listed. But more importantly, I've pulled from the last 12 years. Phil introduced me, just mentioned that my experience. So I'm honored to have experience on two sides of the coin. So I had 10 years with Faith Builders, some of which was, I was too young to even do it, but we did it and survived. That was my board experience. And the last 12 years, I was on the other side of the coin. I was the administrator of Anabaptist Financial. And the combination has been a blessing to be on both sides of this very important coin of leadership. And so I'm coming at it from that standpoint. And one of the things that, as I prepared, I thought about, I had the notion that, you know, I think there's something unusual with the Anabaptist Financial Board. And my hunch is that we have a high level of governance unusual in our circles. But I wasn't sure, so I decided to ask them. I tried to ask them how much experience is sitting on this board. So I sent them out a survey, and ask them how many cumulative board years of experience they have. And it came back 560 cumulative board years sitting around our 10-member board, which averages 56 years per director. And I went on to ask them, well, how many boards have you served on? Some of the wisdom of board work comes from diversity of boards. And the average came in at 5. Some of them as high as 7 or 8. Some as low as 3. And then I asked them the hardest thing, to rank the quality of AF's governance as they experience it as a board member compared to the other 5 boards that they settle. And my hunch was that we weren't 5th in the ranking. But I hadn't been around that as much as these guys have. And it came back with a 1.2 first. 2 of them gave it 2nd place, because there is one flaw, at least, in the structure, and they identified the flaw. And both of the 2 that gave it 2nd place mentioned the same thing: not enough board time. It's too rushed for the weight of the organization. I hope they change that. And they didn't get the results of the survey yet, I'm going to suggest they consider they need to be meeting a few more hours. They do their board work in 50 hours of board time a year. Table time. Obviously, there's prep. But their table time. They're complaining, and maybe rightly so. So I'm pulling from that rich experience with that board as being the administrator there, and enjoyed the journey. Great governance, as I mentioned in last session, is eliciting collective wisdom on the right issues within the time frame. The right issues and within the time frame. We talked about our model. It consists this is redundant. Just a few ways to conceptualize what do we mean by governance versus operations. And here's just a few comparisons. Some of them are metaphoric. We all are familiar with working in a business. Many of us have learned our leadership skills in business, and we talk about it that way. I'm suggesting governance is working on versus in. I'm suggesting it's not running the operations. It's sitting with the operations. The metaphor of the board table was used. Your work is done sitting down, not running around on the production floor. Very different. We talk about having our hands on the wheel. Maybe it's arms around rather than hands on. And overseeing versus daily management. I don't know if there's a parallel to church, but the overseer, the bishop, versus somebody closer to the work. And then directing versus administrating. And I mentioned last session that some administrators are still plagued with the label of being the director. And yet they report to directors. We don't call boards board of administrators. We call them board of directors for very clear, distinct reasons. But there's a lot of haze and smoke about who am I? And I hope that clears up in your mind. We're talking about governance here. We're not talking about operations. And one of the things that I felt like I accomplished as I left the FB board is convince them to quit using director for the top man in administration. And when Steve took the office, it got changed. He calls himself the administrator. Melvin called himself the director. And I pushed and kicked and said, we've got to change this. Well, our language matters. The way you talk about things creates reality. Let's get straight on what the job is. Okay, we're talking about 4 elements. If you were in last session, to this session we're going to be talking about the upper level here, board structure and process and delegation. We talked about that the bottom half of these 4 elements, a board can delegate the bulk of that. They got to get their arms around all of it. They're responsible for everything, but they can delegate very little of the top half of the circle. Very little. But that's what we're going to focus on. So we're really talking about the heartland of governance in this session. just a brief description of the four, and then we're going to move into the top two. So board structure and process is the manner in which the board represents the ownership, structures its own activities, and engages in processes that carry out its own work of organizational leadership. Board delegation and linkage is the manner in which the authority and support is passed from the board to the administrator, and the relational linkage and connection and support between the board and administration. Outcomes and results is a matter in which people are ultimately transformed and matured and changed by the organization, by the mission, and yet it is not directly the operational activity of which we speak when we talk about results and outcomes. What is the human net profit to the world and to the constituency and to the recipient? In the end, what net results exist because of your organizational mission? What do we mean by operational directives? The manner in which operational performance is directed, reported, and assessed by the board. It's the operational boundaries and directives designed by the board to guide operation. So that's just a quick overview. Let's move right then into what do we mean by board structure. We'll take a look at structure, we'll take a look at process, we'll take a look at linkage, and I think we have 5 points on each one of them, so we have 15 thoughts here to go over. Let's jump in and talk about structure as it relates to being a trustee. I want you to think of a board member as a trustee. At a church level, we tend to call it that. At least at our church and where I grew up, we called board members trustees. I think that's an apt concept that is a deep understanding of what it means to be a board member. Board members hold a moral ownership rather than an equity ownership. In equity companies or for-profit companies, we say he who holds the gold rolls. If you're in a nonprofit, your bylaws should explicitly state that there's no equity holders. No shareholders. Instead, the board's role as is an owner representative or a trustee. But to whom is the board accountable? Who is the source of authority? Trusteeship is a social obligation. A board must be self-responsible, of course, to act as trustees or as moral owners on the behalf of the constituent owners. A board is entrusted by its constituent owners, a broader group than the board. The board's primary accountability is to them. Sometimes nonprofits derive their formal authority from a conference or a district, and that's more understood. But many of our current nonprofits are not authorized from a clear structure of authority. But if we lose this concept, our structure is cut off at the knees. Let's take a look at this a little further. So AF is in this position. We don't have a formal overarching authority structure. We say we're an independent nonprofit for reasons. However, this arrangement should not be confused as being autonomous or independent and answerable to no one. Boards must establish, maintain, and clarify and protect this trustee relationship by keeping in close contact with their constituents. Nonprofits exist to serve the common good of the constituent's owner, not merely the good of the recipients. Let's take a look at a diagram to get our arms around this. Notice here, I have the boards in three and two circles here, the chair within the board, and then the board within the constituents' owners. The board, in its truest sense, are representative owners. They're within the circle of ownership. But if you view yourself as a non-equity owner, you're violating the general understood structure of nonprofit board ownership. And note that your constituents, owners, and your recipients of the organization, due to the production of the staff and the mission being accomplished, is not always, and many times is not, the same group. Don't confuse your constituent owners, to which the board's answer from the standpoint of authority, to those you promise to deliver products and service and ministry to. Sometimes they overlap and are one and the same, but in most cases, that is the same people group. But you're actually answering from a standpoint of authority to different individuals within the same groups. Take, for example, a given school, a Mennonite school, their recipients is going to be what we call the student body. And oftentimes, the structure of board members, you have to be within the recipients to be on the board. Some are set up that way, it's very common. But who is the constituent owners in that scenario?
Parents.
Parents are within this circle, that's right. Anybody else in that circle? Parents are the only one in this circle. Anyone else in this circle?
The congregation, the group.
Absolutely. The grandpas that no longer have children in school are in here. They are the heart of who you report to in a scenario like that. Very different than just this group. It's important to understand who you report to when you're an independent nonprofit. Some boards operate as though they report to no one. Are you holding yourself accountable to the role of trusteeship? How are you honoring constituent trust on the board you sit? How do you report to your constituent owners? How do you hear their direction? What are the specific practices your board engages to hear your constituent owners? Well, one of the way AF does it is, this is exactly why we have an advisory group. We don't call them a board. We call them an advisory group. They meet with the board once a year. And we give them a metaphor to help them realize what their job is on our advisory group. Their job is not governance. It's not anywhere close to the same as the board. We say their job is to keep their ear to the ground. That's how we talk about it. You're to be out there listening to whatever part of the constituent group you're tied to, and just be ears. Hear especially the net effect of our organization on the community. Advisory group is one way to serve that. Key communication with key leaders, the old men in particular. Due diligence in reviewing end results is one of the ways to hear from constituents. What is the net effect? We talked on that last time. You're going to have to look outside of operations to find out what is your effect on the broader constituency that you are accountable to. Lastly, even assign board members with specific tasks that's not at the board table. It's not performed at the board table in relation to a key person in your constituency that you've identified that you're answering to. Whoops, yeah, there's just a picture of our group. All right, bylaws. I'm suggesting that bylaws is a key element of structure. Boring, dusty bylaws.
Just got done making some up.
Well, let me tell you, they are the foundations of governance. You know, when you're in for-profit, the equivalent of bylaws is your operating agreement. And if you don't know what your operating agreement and you have partners, you're set up for a train wreck. You don't know what it says. And if you're on a board and you don't know what your bylaws say, you're on a train, and it didn't wreck yet, but you're cruising for a bruiser. Bylaws need to be read and understood and revised to stay current with the needs of the government and the organization. Don't let them things get out of date. There are your pillars on which your key processes hang. Again, they're stated so broadly, and maybe your bylaws are junk because an attorney did you disservice. Bylaws should be tailored to your board's vision of governance. Attorneys love handing template stuff out that didn't cost them a dime. They charge you $300, $400 for it, for an hour of labor that was seconds on a click. They didn't customize it to your governing parameters and needs. Design and build bylaws to align with your particular vision of governance. If you're bored reading bylaws, you probably ought to decide on another job. Your heart's not in it. These are important. Let's go to the third point, creating a whole board. Some boards exist as half boards, partial boards, and don't experience the power and strength of being what I'm calling a whole board. What do I mean by whole board? Well, as preface to the idea here, the structure here that's critical is your selection process. Some boards are
perpetuating.
Thank you. Some are constituency chosen, some are recipient. We talked about these different circles. Sometimes a recipient chooses the board member, sometimes it's a broader circle, a constituent. Sometimes they choose themselves. Now, sometimes these three methods make this principle hard to actually be achieved. I'm telling you, this is an important thing to think about, that you have a diversity of gifts and strengths on your board. But there's limits to the accomplishment of this sometimes because of the way they're structured. Now, those are three good methods, but keep in mind, sometimes they are at odds with achieving a careful mix and composite of board talent relative to the mission of the organization. Birds of a feather flock together works to a point, but becoming a good old boys club is better for golf or some of these games than they are the board table. Board members should be selected strategically in reference to the leadership needs of the organization. So what are some of those factors of what I mean by whole boards? Well, the right size is important. Now, you can't go but so small, and typically a board doesn't go down to less than five. You go to three, you call that a committee. Okay, so five is kind of your bottom number, and the top range is whatever there, but I'm suggesting too large a boards are a problem. Years back, 20 and 30 years ago, they went, even in our circles, some of your nursing homes and big organizations, up to 20 board members. There's a trend among us and even others that too many, you're disengaged, you're not needed, you don't need, the right size is important. What is it for your organization? Discern that and revise the bylaws to state it. AF's at 10. Feels right for us. But there is no right number. Get it sized right. Secondly, you need a mix of skills. Now, I said in last session that you need your wisdom at the board table, not your widget-making expertise. But skills do matter at the board table. And you might need some financial people at the board table, and you might need some operational skills at the board table, even to do governance. You need different skills, and to think of men who bring what is needed from a kind of an expert skill level is important to think about and choose accordingly. Giftings. Scripture's pretty clear about the body of Christ is made up of members, and we have different gifts. Now, this is different than skills. But I'm telling you, if you have a board full of mercy-gifted people, help. You'd be a very soft organization and gentle and caring and nice. But bring on the prophets to get something done. Okay? A mix of the gifts of the Spirit is crucial. Pay attention to that. And then gifts of value, gifts of constituency representation, representation of different constituency. All this brings wholeness. And then lastly, bringing a board member in structurally, make sure, you know, you don't do it cold turkey, especially if you're a complex organization. The orientation process matters. Do you have an orientation process that's significant, that they come on and they feel prepared to participate? What does it look like? Simple operation, maybe that's not necessary. But they need to be prepared to do the work and have the tools in their hands. Let's go to the next idea here. I want to talk just about a bit about the role of the chairman. I think Gary Miller had a whole session on the role of the chairman. And I heard it 2 years ago. It's worth attending if he didn't already give it. It's excellent. I want to just talk a little bit about one factor. So the role of the chairman, I just want to highlight two ideas here. One is it's the chairman's job to ensure the integrity of the structure and particularly the processes that the board goes through. And then secondly, to empower and support the administration. We're going to come back to that in our last point on delegation. But here's something that I've witnessed on Anabaptist Financials Board that was powerful. So our chair is Ken Burkholder, and our vice is Dennis Martin. And I don't know if they confer about this, but those two men pull together like two horses. Some vice chairmen sit there, and their only known purpose is just in case the chairman drops over dead. I mean, he's there to take his place. I'm telling you, that's a very weak definition of a vice chair. Dennis and Ken pull together. They're gifted differently, but they are dynamite on the board because they do this 1-2 approach. They have each other's back. So Ken is good at structure and he keeps time, but Dennis is a guardian of quality conversation. And it's hard to keep track of some of the structure of the board meeting and get quality. These two men have that worked out. And I don't know if it just happens or if they work and train on this behind the board. I have no idea. It is noticeable. Do you know a horse can pull, if the horse can pull 1,000 pound by himself, you hook two horses together and they say they can pull 3,000, a third more by just linking themselves together. If the vice and chair can get it together, very important part of structure. Let's talk about committees. Committees is obviously a form of structure. Committees, defining the role of committee is important. Here's an example of, and I have more in the book there, so here we have a human resources committee. Clearly defines what their job is. It's important. Any committee needs written definition of what their role is. Committees are all about economizing time. Okay, not everything needs to be done at the board table. So there's the audit committee that needs to meet with Mark. You know, the whole board can't waste their time meeting with Mark, but he needs to see somebody. He needs to spend some time with them. An audit committee sometimes is a very typical but here's the challenge. Committees threaten the board. You know why? Because they do board work that must have all boards present sometimes. Committees need to realize the limitation of their role. They must preserve one voice. And yet they must deliberate. They got to go meet with Mark Payne without the board. And they got to bring something back. I say the fewer committees, the better. but then that tends to eat up board time. Committees are not decision-making or mini boards, but merely gatherers of information that should come to the board for a decision. If decisions are essentially made at committee level, you're misfunctioning. You're a threat to the power of board governance. Deliberate with many voices, but govern with one. But sift through the information, package it for the board. But don't predetermine the decision, unless it's a small one. Let's go to the different types of committee. There's some typical committees. And don't forget the power of this committee. These are tend to be standing committees that you need. Okay? But the ad hoc committee, the temporary committee, and then close it down. You have a certain task you got to accomplish. You got to form a committee. It's fine. But don't make it last forever when it's not needed. All right? Just a temporary committee to get something done outside of board table. A couple tips here on committees. Avoid the death by committee and appoint somebody as a point man. Committees go south fast if someone isn't a point man. Make sure you choose the right people for the committee, assign tasks, and be sure it comes back to the board for as a report of some sort. Let's talk about clean separation between directors and administration. Boards need only one person to lead. They only have one agent. Boards hire one person. The administrator does the rest. Staff needs to know where the board's, where the buck stops. Why is it that boards don't function well in operations as directors? You understand board governance. There is no boss on the board. They're all equal in authority. The chairman is merely a facilitator. You put them guys in operations, and some of them can do well with no boss, but most times in operation, they're got to be the lead man who has his head around what's going on and holds more authority than the rest of the team. So in operations, it's a standard template. Administrator has more authority than rest. On the board, it's equal authority. It's first among equals as a chairman. But he does not hold more authority. You put those guys in operations, they're soon going to struggle. They're not designed. The structure of board governance is not designed for operation because the authority is equal. If the concept that the chairman has more authority, there's no basis for that. That's a flawed idea. He does have responsibility that others don't, but their authority is only legitimate as they hold it as a group, as a one voice, final decision. The board can't veto the group decision, can he? That's the safety of it. That's the magic of governance. It is collective wisdom. Don't allow board members to serve in a staff role on a long-term, full-time basis. One of the why is it not a good idea that administrators not be a member of the board? And I have an assumption thrown in. I know there's some administrators, I hope there's none in here, that are also sitting on the board. I'm not even embarrassed to be against it. We did it once at AF and never again in our early years. We left a man in operation also sit on the board. Some organizations have done it for 20, 30, 40 years. It's a flawed concept. What happens if you're the CEO, the president of the organization? Sometimes some people use president as chairman. I don't mean it in that way. But you're the administrator and you also sit on the board and you're voting and you have the same function as your board members. You have the most power in the organization. Whether you admit it or not, you have more power than any single person in the organization if you got a vote and you have all the influence of operations under your hat. That's a flawed concept. And the man that's in that position typically can't feel it or admit it. Too many conflicts of interest that are never owned. Too much power and too much influence. I'm suggesting good structure. Thank you. Good structure has clean separation between its board of directors and its administrators, and then let's give them titles accordingly. Let's go jump into process here. We got 10 minutes. Got to speed up here a little bit. How can boards achieve quality discussions and good decisions? And here's where my heart's at. Well, five things here. Let's jump in. You got to plan well in events. These men are busy. You need an annual calendar. You should be achieving near perfect attendance if you plan far enough ahead. But you got to plan ahead. Second point of good process is create an intentional agendas. The board's got to own the agenda. Of course, operations is going to speak into the agenda a lot, but they need to own it. They need to be in control of their own agenda. One of the easy ways to do it is standardize your agenda. Certain things go on there at certain board meetings at certain times of the year, and it cycles around. And yes, you can add an extra item if they decide so. Make the agenda timed. That doesn't mean you can't go over time, but have it timed. And by all means, protect it from unnecessary operational fluff. I talked about that in the last meeting. Good process provides well-designed information. When the board members walk into the board room, they need their equipment just like the farmer that comes onto his field. They need their tractors. They need their equipment to pull the heavy load. And essentially, for AF, there's two pieces of information that our board members come into the boardroom with. One is their board governance policies, all laid out, table of contents, with tabs where they come up against a certain process that they got to go through. These guys are all over 50. They forget the process and they got to look it up. Okay, that's how we do that. It needs to be at their fingertips. Time clock's ticking. Board governance book is essential, unless they're under 50. Okay? Secondly, they need the agenda for that two-day, one-day board meeting. And again, this is sometimes 100 hours of work by the people in operation to put this all together with their leadership, their guidance. And this is our small one, our strategic planning one. This is 100 and some pages, but a lot of work. But they are armed. They get this a week ahead of time. They commit themselves to reading it and be pre-prepared to engage in the issues. There's no coming into our boardroom uninformed and not knowing the agenda and not having read background to every issue and knowing which decisions are actually expected to be made at that board table. That's all part. You can't have weakness here and expect to have a half-decent discussion. We're looking at quality discussion. We've got to have well-designed information. On our board, they talk about, and they get us officers, raw meat, take it back. This is not ready for discussion. They want well-cooked meat ready to take a hold of. And sometimes we don't have enough of the research done. They send it back. It comes back next board meeting. One of the ways that they talk about. Dennis Martin said this in an email just 2 days ago. As I reflect on several hundred hours of board meetings that I've witnessed while serving on various boards, the most productive meetings were those that were well planned for, and in most cases, the poorly executed board meetings were a result of inadequate board preparation. Let's talk about quality discussion. Again, chair and vice are very important here. I already touched on that at the beginning. In one sense, it's like patchwork discussion. You start and you ought to have the discussion needs to be broad at first, and it's various perspectives, but you're narrowing it down. And you're, as it were, stitching towards what I think is it should be two perspectives. You don't know if you have the best idea unless you compare it again against at least one other and say, here's a good one, but here's a better one. We choose this one. When you never have that second perspective, you often don't land on the best. Someone said if we all agree, someone isn't needed. I'm going to skip to a couple ideas here. I want to say a few things about delegation yet. Solid values alignment. Don't expect to have good linkage between the board and your administrator if values don't align. It is the foundation for this linkage to be great. He can be Mr. Expert, but if his values aren't there, dismiss him and get someone that the board's comfortable with. Don't sweat values cross. Clear job description. Collaboration and teamwork between the chair and administrator. Here is a gift that was offered me for my 12 years, and this is the one regret I have leaving the CEO post, is I don't get to talk to Ken Burkholder much anymore. He was an incredible chair to me as administrator. Available. Conversations were effective. I don't get those conversations. Oh, I can still talk to him. It's not disallowed, but I'm not the administrator anymore. And the chairman and the administrator are our team to pull together. The last one here is, or two last ones. I want to talk about the Solomon principle. Effective support, evaluation, and development. Good delegation is supported delegation. It's taking care of your administrator at two levels, at three levels, support and evaluation and keeping him growing. We all know Solomon's wisdom and wealth to the degree that it attracted the Queen of Sheba. She heard about Solomon there, 1 Kings 10, and she finally comes to visit him. Solomon shows the Queen of Sheba all around. And as their visit's ending up, Queen of Sheba has a few things to say. And she says, you know, Solomon, I didn't believe your report. So I came to see it with my own eyes. And she said, the truth is, the half wasn't told me. The half wasn't told me. And then the next verse is significant. The half that wasn't told her, the wealth, and the wealth and his wisdom was told her. That's why she came. You know what she said was the half that wasn't told her? She said, your servants are happy. The people under you are happy. She was shocked. Wealth and wisdom, or at least power, sometimes doesn't make happy people under those rulers. As a board, is your administrator happy? Is he very happy with his board? Is he supported? Is he taken care of? I remember, where are we at? 1 minute. Here's my story. We were in about our third year with AF, and we didn't break even yet. We were still digging a hole in the ground. and the security commissions were starting to doubt whether we were going to get this ship turned around financially. And they were starting to threaten, we may not renew your license unless you guys get profitable very, very fast. And they'd agreed it always takes time to start an organization, get it turned around, get it profitable. We're a nonprofit that has to make money, okay, because we got investors to protect. And I wasn't very happy. I'm in charge of operations, right? And this started to come down on me. And I started to think, you know what? What if this fails? I didn't ask for this job. I don't have any financial education. I really didn't even want this job early on, but somehow I was there. And I was complaining to Ken. I said, it feels like I'm being crushed. Something don't feel good inside as it relates to my leadership. And he said, let me, I hear you. I want to go talk to some of my board members. He came back and he said, Merle, I was questioning whether someone else should take the role. That's what I suggested. I said, I don't know what's going on inside of me, but I'm afraid. It's part of what's going on. I'm afraid. And he said, Merle, he came back and he said, Merle, you belong in this role. The board believes in you, but we're going to support you. And you know what they did? They gave me access to Merle Burkholder, who mentored me for a year. And it wasn't all about the weight of the financial organization. That was just a tip. There was other things in my life that I needed a mentor. And I got Merle Burkholder for a year. Now, Merle Burkholder was a busy man. He was on the board at that time. Not anybody can just get access to Merle. He's like Dwayne. He's just a very, very busy man. I got monthly meetings with Merle, and I got mentored. And it's a turning point in my leadership. I was very happy a year or so later. They were living, our board was living the Solomon principle. And I challenge you, make sure in your process and in your linkage to your key operation person that you're fulfilling the Solomon principle.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.